Sarah Brewer, Quitting Pornography, Part 2. In this episode, successful life coach Sarah Brewer gives strategies on how a person can quit porn without the need to call on God.
Hey, Sarah.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, we got it to work.
Yeah, we did. So I'm glad. And honestly, I'm excited to have you on this episode.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited too.
Yeah, so I guess we'll just dive right into it. And I've been hyping you up on the page. So what do you, tell us, what do you do for a living?
So I am a life coach that helps people quit viewing pornography. My approach is shame-free and sex positive. I have a podcast and a program and do a number of classes and presentations, etc.
Okay. How long have you been doing that for?
I started in, let's say I really got serious about it in 2020, but I had been coaching since 2018 and working with people, but I really, really started in 2020.
Oh, so what's like, what's a life coach? I mean, did you have to go to like any type of schooling? I guess tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So life coaching, it sounds so funny, right?
Yeah.
Like if you think about, I always laugh when I hear TV shows and they're making jokes. Oh, that's my life coach. You know?
Yeah.
It is. It's such a funny thing. It's not a regulated industry. And so anyone can hop on the internet and say, I'm a life coach and let me come and help you. I have done a number of different certifications. I graduated BYU from therapeutic recreation, and I was going to get my license to start doing rec therapy, which are just different kind of group therapies. And I worked in residential treatment homes for teens and women's center stuff. And when I was finishing up stuff to get my license, I've discovered life coaching through podcasts and different programs that I had joined, and it really changed my life, and I learned so much, and it helped me so much more than anything had before, and I was in love with it. I loved the tools that I had. I felt like I could help people a lot more, and I wanted to be a little bit more in charge of my voice online, and wanted to do online business, and it felt like a really great mix of the two. And so I went and did LCS certification, some advanced faith-based certification the next year. Then the next year I did some advanced trauma, relationship trauma certification to be a trauma-informed coach. And this doing some other ones this year too. So you don't have to have any certifications, but of course, highly recommended if right. You're going to be helping and working with people. And so, yeah, that's a little bit of my path, how I got into it.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And, you know, for those that are listening, so I found out about Sarah through a follower of Instagram, just because somebody had submitted a confession about how they struggled with pornography, and I don't know if they couldn't get over it or whatever. And some followers said, hey, like, I've tried everything, but this Sarah Brewer, she's phenomenal. And I was able to quit looking at porn. So I was just like, what the hell? So like, mm-hmm. I decided to follow, and it's been interesting. So,
Cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So somebody helped out at BYU. So yeah, cool. that's how I came across your page. And so that's actually why I wanted to talk to you about it. As you know, like in the last episode, I interviewed Kip. Mm-hmm. And Kip, you know, he'd been struggling with pornography his entire life. 15, from age 10 to 25, he had this chronic pornography problem. And for him, he found that it was through God that he was able to quit, right? Through the 12-step program the church has. And so it's interesting to me that as I followed your page, you don't, I see you talk about some spirituality, but your focus isn't, you know, necessarily on that. Mm-hmm. And so before I dive into that, though, I want to ask, like, what do you define as an addiction?
Yeah. That's a good question, and there's not like one answer that everyone agrees on. If you Google what is an addiction, scholarly articles, like you'll see there's just so much research out there, people trying, you know, different ways to define it. How I like to help my clients is we typically define it as something that keeps you from living a mostly functional life. So it's keeping you from having healthy relationships and from going to school or going to work, and you just can't, like maybe you're in danger, you're putting yourself or other people in danger. It's something that's keeping you from having a mostly normal functioning life.
Okay. So, and I want to bring this up. So I'm LDS. I've been LDS for 10 years, and for me, and I'm sure you have clients from all types of faith background, but for me, it was often taught, like, I don't know, let's say one day I saw, like a leaked sex tape on the news, and I'm like, oh shit, I want to go look at it, right? So then, like, temptation eventually caves in, I look it up, and then all of a sudden I feel this immense shame. And then I go talk to my bishop or pastor, as people that aren't familiar with it. And then, you know, they just tell me, yo, we might have to get you into like a program, you know, that's an addiction. But that's, according to you, that's not an addiction, right?
No. Right. It's not, it's normal. It's very, very normal and natural for people to see something sexual and want to go and look it up. It's part of growing up and having a human body and having an adult body and learning about this body. And that doesn't mean, you know, I'm not saying we just do whatever we want and we don't listen to our value system. Absolutely. That's really important, but we need to normalize the sexuality and the desire to view porn and the desire to experience sexual things. Because when we don't, we actually make it more of a problem than it really is.
Okay, tell us about that. Like, what do you mean by more of a problem?
So, I think of teenagers who have viewed pornography or started to get interested in sexuality, and it's not compulsive. And we can talk about this too. Like, even if it is feeling compulsive, I wouldn't necessarily, I don't know, you don't have to define it as an addiction. There's still a shame-free and a mindful way that's not the addiction model to quit, even if it is more compulsion. But if, you know, I think of a teenager who, you know, is excited about something they saw online, and they make that mean that, oh my gosh, what is wrong with me? They fall into the shame cycle. The shame cycle leads to hiding and avoiding, not talking to anyone about it, feeling extremely shameful about it. And when we feel shame, we're most likely going to view more porn. And so it creates more porn use, creates more of this idea in their mind that there's something wrong with them and they're addicted, feeling powerless, feeling out of control, instead of just realizing, oh, this is a normal part of growing up. I want sexual things, and that's okay. It's kind of like sugar. So people who demonize sugar, any desire for sugar is bad. What typically, I mean, that's like a great breeding ground for eating disorders, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of shame and binging behavior because wanting sugar is bad, and sugar is bad, and I shouldn't want this, and I shouldn't have this. There's a difference between physiology and morality. So physiology, or normal natural body symptoms and experiences, hunger, fatigue, a sexual desire. Morality is what you do with those physiological symptoms. So if you have desire, like if you're experiencing hunger, you have choices. You can go and make a sandwich, or you can steal your roommate's food, or you can, right? You can go steal something from the grocery store. Morality is what you do with those symptoms. And that's going to be different based off of different people's, you know, value system around pornography. But physiology, experiencing that desire, is not a morality issue. And, you know, viewing porn does not equal addiction. And when we do that, we create a lot of problems.
Yeah, no, as you brought that up, I had a reflection on my mission. I remember sitting on a they're supposed to be, you know, as saintly as possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Christian monks there. And I remember I was on a bus, and there's this really attractive girl sitting next to me. And keep in mind, so for those that aren't familiar, on a mission, you're not allowed to have any contact with the opposite sex. You can't hug them or anything like that. I mean,
you can barely look them in the eyes, right?
Right.
That's
right.
How I felt on my mission.
Yeah, so it's difficult in that sense. And anyways, I remember they had this girl, she like rubbed up against me, and because, you know, you go so long without any kind of contact, you're like, oh man, like that's hot. And like, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, I gotta tell my mission president, I gotta like confess this, you know. And it's crazy though, because that was just a desire, you know. It's just like,
just normal.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a feeling of the body, right? It wasn't like I actually was thinking, you know, I want to do stuff. It was just my body got aroused. And so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you can experience that and still make decisions within your value system and still quit porn. And it's actually a lot easier to quit porn when you just normalize those feelings. Walking down the beach, you see someone in a bikini, like, normalize. Oh, we live in like a super hypersexualized culture, especially here in America, westernized, like so hypersexualized. So if we have like an automatic urge or an automatic sexual thought, we don't have to make that mean all of these things. We can just notice it, breathe into it, and then move on without like diving into it and getting into shame around it. It's so unhelpful.
So what do you mean by breathe into it? Tell us about that.
So one of the big tools that I teach and use with my clients is mindfulness. And there are so many studies that show that mindfulness and CBT therapy, they're just really, really, really useful for quitting porn. And so mindfulness is recognizing what you're experiencing and allowing it to be there and allowing it to pass through you and being aware of it and not trying to push it away and not trying to use willpower. And so when you feel an urge, you have a few options. You can use willpower, go away, go away, go away. I'm not going to think that. Get out of here. What that does is it's like holding a beach ball underwater. And when you hold a beach ball underwater, right? Mm-hmm. What happens? It wants to pop up. And so, you know, that's what a lot of people experience with urges, especially like sexual urges. No, go away, go away, go away. And then it just explodes and you're like, whatever. And you give into it. So that's the second option, is we can just give into it and respond to it. So you have an urge to view porn and you're like, okay, sweet, let's go do it. And the third option is that you can, I call it allow it, or you can use mindfulness, or like sometimes I say breathe into it. So this is a way that not many of us have been taught to manage urges and other emotions, but it's allowing it to be there and watching it just come in your body, letting it be there, breathing into it, relaxing into it. And then, you know, it's able to make its way out of that. I can go into like a specific easy way to do that if you want me to, but I don't want to talk too much. So let me know what questions you have about that.
You're good. Yeah, before I get into that, I do want you to talk about that. This is just more of just me chatting, because I'm curious as, like, you think, like, sorry, I got to get my thoughts around this. There's, like, a rooster near me.
Sure, going. Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's interesting to me. Like, you say, you know, we live in a sexualized culture, so... You know, obviously you're told, I feel like, especially if you're a Christian, right, you're not, depending on the rules that your mind has been told to accept, like you said, on your mission, you felt like you couldn't look into a person's eyes, right? Mm-hmm. Do you feel that urge is, the urges we feel have to do with the values that we're instilled with? And the reason I ask that is because I, for example, if I begin talking about sexual stuff more openly, all of a sudden, if I see a girl in a bikini, that's not a big thing for me, you know. That's not like a temptation. Yeah. But if I'm suppressing it, if I'm told like that's not okay, then I would have to do that exercise.
Yes,
that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I mean, it shows when we suppress and we hold stuff down, it gives it more power than it actually has when we just let it exist. And so I think about, you know, in Europe or even in South America, like bodies are more normalized, especially women's bodies. And so it's not that big of a deal to go to like a topless beach or to be, you know, you hear stories of missionaries down South America and the women are breastfeeding and it's just totally normal, normalized in that culture. But for those of us who maybe we see that as bad or we see that as like wrong, it tends to have like a bigger reaction and a little bit more of a sexual reaction. If you think of sexuality, like sexuality thrives and it lives in this realm of like forbiddenness and secrets and darkness, like that's sexy. And so it makes sense that, you know, when we forbid things, it becomes more sexy than when maybe it's not.
But wouldn't you argue at the same time, though, it's kind of good to have that? Because if you normalize everything, right, somebody that looks at porn too much, all of a sudden they're, and I feel like this is a big issue that the LDS Church brings up, right? It's, you know, it's don't look at porn. Well, one, women feel really, really shitty about themselves because their husband, you know, is doing this thing that the religion tells them not to. And on top of that, for men, like, you go on porn, every woman on there's, you can find perfect women on there to fit whatever fantasy you have. And then all of a sudden you look at your wife who, I don't know, maybe she's birthed a kid or two and she's, you know, she's struggling with some weight loss and she's no longer attractive to you physically. So don't you think there's like something there to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this is kind of that idea of physiology versus morality. And so I don't like porn. I do not think that they're great. I don't like the industry. I think it's harmful to people and their like self-esteem. I think that there can be a lot of harmful things about it, especially, you know, the how we use it to escape our lives and escape our relationships. But we can recognize that we don't want porn to be a part of our life while normalizing the sexual, the ability that we have to be sexual and the normal, natural sexual urges that we have. People tend to have more problems with porn when they're really resisting and pushing all of that away and shaming it.
That's interesting. So yeah, tell us before I go into that. So tell us about it. So like, you know, assuming I'm a dude that's, you know, told not to look at women in women's eyes, right? what would I have to do to overcome that urge? Like, what's that exercise you're talking about?
Okay, yeah. So it's I stop, drop, and breathe. So you stop and you notice and you say to yourself, okay, I'm feeling a sexual urge. And you point it out to yourself. That's stop. You drop into your body. So what am I feeling in my body? This is this mindfulness exercise, right? And those of you who do practice meditation might, you know, this is going to be, it's going to feel similar. So you drop into your body. So what am I feeling? Am I feeling tightness? Am I feeling heaviness? Am I like, what am I feeling in my body? Maybe you notice there's other emotions hanging out in there, like anxiousness, etc. Drop into your body. And then lastly, you breathe. And so, right, when we're feeling urges and we don't want to look at stuff, a lot of times our shoulders are clenched and, you know, we're feeling pretty tight. So instead we want to just relax and breathe into it. I'm feeling an urge and that's okay. Breathe. And that doesn't mean, right, I'm feeling an urge, I'm going to go act on it. Kind of like how we get that really mixed up. Like if we're okay with sexual feelings, we're just going to respond to them. And that is not true. And that's not how it has to be. You can be totally okay with sexual feelings and recognizing them. Breathe into them. Just let it hang out in your body without acting on it, without going and viewing porn, without acting outside of your value system. And what this does is it allows it to make its way through your body and to go away. Kind of like you said, like when I'm talking about sex and I'm normalizing sex, it doesn't feel as big of a deal than when I'm repressing everything. And it doesn't feel like I need to like really do a lot of work to not think about it. I can just kind of let it come in and out, breathe in and out. We learn how to do this with emotions too. I think of, I have two little kids and we watch Daniel Tiger. And one of the things Daniel Tiger teaches is when you feel so mad that you want to roar, take a deep breath and count to four. Right. And so we're teaching emotions like anger. Anger we can push away and demonize and say we shouldn't be angry, shouldn't be angry. What usually happens is then we usually end up exploding because, right, beach ball, holding a beach ball in water, what happens? It pops up. So instead, we stop, drop, and breathe into it. We breathe into the anger. When we feel so mad that we want to roar, take a breath and count to four. One, two, three, four. We're not going to just explode. We're not just going to yell. We're not just going to do what the anger is yelling at us to do. We're going to notice it, breathe into it, and then it goes away.
Wow. What, you know what, why do I even go to church? I could just watch Daniel the Tiger, right?
Right. Right.
But I did like that you cross-referenced that to anger, because I feel like it's interesting. Would you say that this applies to other things that would help you align with your value system? And for example, okay, good. Because the example that came to mind is sometimes, especially like on certain times on my page when I've talked about anything sexual, well, a lot of the people that follow me are LDS, mm-hmm. you know, women. And, you know, for them, what's interesting is a lot of people that are religious, I mean, or LDS especially, right? They've been suppressed sexually. And so all of a sudden somebody starts talking about it. And then some of them like feel a need to act out on it. And so I'll get some messages where I'm just like, right. I'm like, oh, dang. And I just want to say it to those that feel that they could probably not do that, right? But Yeah,
it's deciding what you want from your life, deciding your value system, and then practicing a little bit more mindfulness and emotional awareness, what's going on in your body, and using, so when you have those emotions come up, recognizing them, breathing into them, and then still living within your value system. It's going to make it a lot easier than if you're just trying to suppress everything.
So, and I appreciate you for saying that. So is this something that like it improves with time? Like as like, let's say I'm walking through a beach, right? The very first time ever I see a girl in a bikini, I do your exercise. Am I going to have to do that exercise with every single girl I see on the beach or just?
So no, you'll get better at it and you'll start to normalize things and it won't be as big of a deal as maybe the first couple times. So an exercise I do with my clients, we call it 100 urges. So we practice processing or sitting with these urges 100 times. And it is amazing to see like what completely different people they are at the beginning of that exercise and at the end of 100 urges. And that's not to say, right, the goal here isn't to make sexuality go away and to make sexual urges go away. The goal is to feel in complete control of them. And you do that by learning how to let them exist, let it exist in you instead of like hating it or demonizing it or pushing it away. But it does get easier. And one thing I'll say too is, you know, for people who have more compulsive porn use, maybe every night at 10 p.m., right? Or every morning or whatever. You've trained your brain to want the dopamine at that time. Mm-hmm. And so as you practice this, it also, and there's a lot I could say about this, but anyways, I have some other free resources I can send them to at the end of the podcast if they want to learn more about this. But as you practice this, it actually brings that over desire down. So your brain stops looking for that dopamine every night at 10 p.m. You're not going to have these compulsive urges for porn anymore. And we're still also going to experience sexuality. So maybe like, yeah, maybe you do have an urge when you see someone in a bikini, but instead of it being like this big deal, I have to stop, drop, and breathe into it. You've practiced it. You're really good at it. It's like playing the piano, right? Like the first few times you play the piano, it's kind of clunky. And then you play it, you know, 100 times and you're really good at it. It's just simple. It's natural. And you've learned how to let this exist in you while being in completely control and learning how to act fully in your value system, which might be like only sexual experiences within your marriage relationship, which I love. And I think that's beautiful. You can do that and have that and allow sexuality to exist in you.
And I love that. So that, as you were saying that, there was a bunch of thoughts that began, a bunch of questions that began popping up in my head. And I want to actually ask you about this. So, you know, if you're religious, or if you're not religious, if people that are alcoholics, whatever, drug addicts, you know, there's programs out there that have been, I mean, they've been around for like 50 years or so, right? Like the AA meetings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been a blessing to, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around the world, or probably even millions now that have quit. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people, they like one of the first steps is, and I'll go over it right now. I have it pulled up, you know, admit that of yourself are powerless to overcome your addictions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that phrase, it makes them have to appeal to a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that people can just overcome this without a belief in a God? Do they, like, without having to believe in a higher power, whatever that may be?
Yeah. So yeah, you can. I want you to think of this, you know, it's more of like, you know, trying to quit sugar or trying to go on a diet or trying to, you know, whatever that is. You don't need a belief in God to be able to quit sugar. You don't need a belief in a God to quit porn. And you can absolutely keep that and use that to help you. It's beautiful. Spirituality is beautiful. You can gain a lot of strength from it. But just like you wouldn't say, God, help me quit sugar and lose 20 pounds. Like, you're going to have to learn how to, you know, meal plan or eat differently, or, you know, exercises. You're going to have to learn all of this stuff. And then you can use God to be a part of that spiritual aspect of your life. Absolutely. But I mean, the truth is, and I have clients all the time who come in and they say, like, that didn't work. Praying and fasting more did not work. And that's really all that people knew to tell me, but it just didn't work. And I believe in God and I love God, but that, what's wrong with me? Am I not spiritual enough? Does God not love me enough? And I always, you know, tell them, no, like, you are spiritual enough. God does love you enough. We just need to learn some new tools as well. We need to put some other tools in your toolbox. We need to do mindfulness. We need to learn emotional management. We need to learn beliefs and identity, how to change how you're thinking about yourself, all these other things. And I do have clients who, you know, don't know what they believe about God. Maybe they're in the middle of a faith crisis. Maybe they're in the middle of not really sure. Maybe they're atheist and they absolutely quit porn. You do not have to have that belief to quit porn. It's not a cause and effect.
But I would say it does add for a stronger, I guess it gives you a purpose though, as to why to quit though, right?
Yeah, it can be a part of people's motivation for sure.
Yeah. You know, I have a cousin who he's addicted. He was addicted to marijuana for about 14 years. And then all of a sudden he just stopped one day. He's like, yeah, you know what? I'm done. And it's been 4 months now and he's lost like 30 pounds. He looks great. He thinks clear and stuff. And it blows me away. But he doesn't believe in God at all. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to share this podcast with him because I don't want him to, when he relapses, I don't want him to be like, oh, it's one, it's over, you know, like I failed. Yeah. I couldn't get this done.
Yeah. Yeah. There are, what was I going to say? I can't remember. It'll come back to me.
Yeah, hopefully. I was going to say, this is just me to brag for this one thing. But for 22 months in my life, I went without a sexual thought. And wow. That was freaking, it's cool. Like, it's cool what you can do to the body. Because, like, I trained my mind to where if I began to have a sexual thought, I would push it out. And so at night, like, eventually it came like I would fall asleep. And so if at any time I couldn't sleep and it was like 11 p.m., I'd be like, just try to think something sexual, and then that would just like knock me out, and I loved it. So it was just cool experience. But that was for my mission. It went away when I came home. So,
yeah, that's I see that, you know, the missionary stuff. That's how I started doing this. Is I started working with returned missionaries, and this came up for people. They're like, on my mission, I had no problem, but as soon as I came home, it came back. What is wrong with me? Just interesting.
Why do you think that is? Let's talk about that though. Like, why do you think being on a mission I mean, because obviously, like on a mission, you are in a, even though you're living in the world, but like your mind's somewhere else. Like it's almost to me, it's for me being on a mission is like a cult. All right, your mission president's like that leader, and you know your aspirations are so different. You're not. It's not about like how much, you know, if I earn this much money, it's gonna make me better because we're all on the same level. It's, you know, for some people, it is about leadership. It's like, dude, if I can just be a zone leader or a district leader or an AP, right? And so your aspirations are different and everything like that. So, but, and so it is a clean environment, but why do you think that is? Why can I go on a mission for 22 months, not even have a sexual thought? And then as soon as I get home and wake up at 6:30, almost like I think I slept in till 7:30, like three times in my mission. You know, it's like, how did I go from that level of discipline to not?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my first thoughts about why we might not struggle on missions and then you come home and you do struggle is because so porn has a lot of dopamine in it. And your brain, when it gets that dopamine, it remembers where and when and what you're doing. And so you're not in the same environment having the same experiences that you were before that was reminding your. And you didn't really have the opportunity that you have when you're home. I don't know what your mission looked like. Did you have like internet, access to internet or anything like that? I didn't.
No.
Yeah. So there's not really access and there's not really the same triggers that would trigger you for that dopamine before. So that's like my first thought about why that is. And probably just you have a lot of willpower and you've got like very strong determination and you've also got a timeline. So you're like, I can do this for 2 years. And you've got that 2 years in mind and it's a little bit easier than I can do this forever. That's my original thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it would have to be more with just the fact that, like you said, yeah, there is, I mean, you know your purpose, right? You understand your purpose. You understand your mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're willing to sacrifice, do whatever to accomplish that.
Yeah, when you really know what you want and you're really sure on that, makes it a lot easier to not look at porn too. So that's where a lot of my clients, you know, we have to work through that is really like committing no matter what, we're not going to view porn. And it's a little bit easier to do that on a mission, maybe because of people around you, or maybe because you have someone with you all the time, or maybe because you're really into the mission.
So it's like, I mean, it goes back to like with sales, right? Sales is a very hard thing to do, especially if you're doing door-to-door sales. And so they always say like, you have to have a why.
Yep. Yes.
And this actually goes next with perfect. It aligns with the next question I had, though. So, you know, did you listen to Kip's episode? I don't blame you if you didn't.
No, I didn't.
So Kip, he's now been 24 months without looking at pornography. And I ask him if there's an endpoint. For him, there is no endpoint, right? Even though he has to go to these meetings, it's only been 2 years, right? But for him, he feels like, yeah, we just need a, because at the end of the 12-step program, you're supposed to, after you've become cleared yourself, help someone else become clean, and then that helps you stay clean. And so I've met with people that have been sober for like 10 years, 12 years, longer, you know, just because they continually do this class. Is there an end point with yours? I mean, is there a point where people are finally done, or is it just to get to, I don't know, maybe they want to go to the temple and they can't be meeting up porn, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It just depends on the person and what they want. So let me know if this answers your question or if it doesn't, but yeah, the goal is people come in, and this is why I have a lifetime access program. And the reason for that is because people don't necessarily need everything forever. They come in and they take advantage of the resources for as long as they need to. But the goal is to move past this. The goal isn't to always see yourself as someone who struggles with porn. I mean, that's maybe more of the addiction model, but like I mentioned before, most of my clients are not addicted. and 12 step hasn't worked for them, and it hasn't been good for them. So the goal is to become someone who doesn't struggle with porn, who feels totally in control of their self and their sexuality at home in their bodies, and to have this beautiful life where they're not stressed and worried about it forever. And they're not always thinking about it. And they're not always, you know, putting filters on their phone and filters on their computer. There is an end point. And it depends on what that is for the client. For some clients, right, maybe they do just want to quit until they can go to their system. It depends on what they want. For some people, it's like, I don't want to quit, but I do want to just feel like I have more control over this, so I'm not viewing it every single day. For other clients, it is like, I don't want any of this in my life, and I want to build a better relationship with my spouse. And for me, that looks like no porn. So it just kind of depends on what they want. But yes, like, the goal isn't just to, like, not look. The goal is to become someone with the identity that this isn't even a struggle anymore.
Mm. Yeah, and I love that, and I admire that you're out trying to do that, because it's hard, and I want you to talk about this. You know, if you're in a high demand religion like the LDS religion,
mm-hmm.
There's people that are just prone to get scrupulosity, right?
More yes.
Driven, right? And so
yeah.
And I'm one of those people. I'm either 100%, you know, the type of dude not thinking a sexual thought for 22 months, or like,
mm-hmm.
or I have to be so far removed from it. Otherwise, I just feel like bad about myself and shame.
Yes.
So what do you do with those people then that like...
Yes. So that, this is a whole big thing. And this is why, like, I do love that... speaking to the people who have these really deep religious beliefs, especially the LDS belief, because I have so much background and so much experience there, right? And know the doctrine inside and out. And I love this question. And there are 1,000 ways we could take this, but I'll just tell you kind of what first comes to mind is we really have to work on the beliefs that are creating shame. And that's one of the first places we start with all of our clients. And sorry, sometimes I say we. So I have a number of coaches who work in my program with me that we work with one-on-one clients. So we have to work on the beliefs that are creating that shame. And it's not either we believe in God and we believe in our LDS faith, or we don't believe in God or we believe in our LDS faith. You can look at those beliefs, and there are so many people who have a beautiful relationship with their LDS God. That allows them to also have the beliefs that it's okay to have sexual feelings and sexual thoughts. It kind of comes down to, what do you believe about God? What do you believe about God in regards to shame? Do you believe God uses shame to help us change? Or is there a way to look at this in another light? And so something I say often to my LDS, well, I don't want to ramble on too much. So no, I have more I can say, but do you want me to stop? Do you have any questions?
Well, Sarah, you're incredibly intelligent, and I feel like you're able to articulate some of the thoughts I want to say really well and ahead of time. And so I want to bring this up for those that maybe are like, wait, what are they about to talk about? So I just want to say this part. So, you know, when I'm about to, like, for me, right, as an OCD person, and this is, sorry, like, I know you know where I'm heading with this, but I want people to understand this. So as an OCD person, you have to, you feel like if at any point in time you view a porn, even if it's just once, and you all of a sudden become quote unquote unworthy,
mm-hmm.
and it creates a system where you just feel like shit. And if you have OCD, it makes it even worse because, you know, yeah. you woke up horny, you got online, you saw some hot girl, and then you all of a sudden you think, like, because I did this, now you can't function. Now all of a sudden I might crash. I might, you know, and it's a real thing. People might think it's silly, but it's legitimate. It's a real fear. that people live with. And this is what Sarah's going to dive into. And so, yeah, you can proceed. I just wanted to clarify for those, you know, people that may not understand why.
And
I love that you're so passionate about it too. So,
yeah, I am, because I think I've, you know, I've experienced that. I think a lot of people who have been really, really all in on religion, and maybe if there's some of that, like purity culture in the religion, like this is a thing, and it's extremely distressing. It's extremely distressing and makes life really hard. And so, you know, I'm not an OCD expert, but scrupulosity and OCD, that's going to be something that you're going to want to work through with a therapist who specializes in this, and recognize that it's not, learning to recognize the different voices between those, you know, more scrupulosity voices and God's voice. And that can be really, really difficult and can be a really big journey that just takes some time to start to work through. But having, you know, even just more basic sex education is going to help with this a lot. Understanding what is normal, understanding what is normal for our bodies, and then finding a way to, what's the word I'm looking for? Finding a way to like rectify, is that a word? Like those, that normal experience with bodies and your spiritual beliefs is going to be really helpful. And so, shame and spirituality. I love to point out to clients with LDS background, like shame is not from God. And we learn that very clearly in the story of Adam and Eve that is taught in the LDS church. So the first time Adam and Eve took the fruit, when they did that, the first thing that Satan said to them was, hide. What is wrong with you? Hide. What have you done? Hide. That is the message that we get from shame. And so when we can start to pick out in our brains, okay, this is shame, this is shame, this is shame, you start to see the results of shame in your life. The results of shame are never good. The results of shame are always hiding and avoiding, not taking responsibility, blaming other people, or just like getting into really deep depression cycles and not being able to get out of it. Those results are not from God. So I love, like, Jesus nailed it when he said, by your fruits you shall know them. So we know if something is from God by the results, by the fruits of it in our life. And so if you're having, you know, beliefs that are keeping you, or you're thinking about things in ways that are keeping you depressed and stuck and full of shame, that is not from God. It can't be. It can't be from God.
Damn. Y'all feel that spirit? That's good.
Yeah, Sarah. I could talk about that for hours too.
Obviously. Yeah. Well, I just want to point this out, you know, just, you know, Eve must have been an absolute baddie to get Adam to leave the Garden of Eden. But yeah, that's what I got from that scripture. I'm glad you expanded on that. So, yeah, so no, but you're right though. It's just interesting. And, you know, I would say to people, yeah, go get help, because I lived with that for so long. I didn't realize that was a thing until I was like 24 and 25. And
yeah,
it wasn't even like healthy once I realized it, and trying to go through different medications and stuff. And eventually it's crazy. So like, and it's sad because so many people just end up leaving their faith altogether because they just think they'll never get their crap together, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's not a reason that is good to leave just because you don't think you can get it together, because there's something wrong with you, because you're viewing a woman on the screen and you're feeling turned on. Like, that's just normal. And God is so much bigger than that. And there have been some really harmful teachings that a lot of us have grown up with that have created a lot of this stuff inside of us. And so it's daunting, and it's really beautiful, a beautiful journey to go through that and unlearn that and relearn a God without shame.
Yeah. And that's, that is a really great point. I mean, so right now we have about 10 minutes left, mm-hmm. right? Is there anything that you wanna for sure bring out that you would hope that anybody that listens to this will hear and understand? Because as we say it, sorry, I like to keep rambling on too. But as I bring this up, there's a lot of people that listen to this that are on the fence, about where they stand with religion, which if you've been raising it, it's with themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, anything I want to say to people who are struggling with porn, or anything I want to say to people who might be struggling with religion?
With themselves and in it, right? Because porn, if you struggle with porn, you're struggling with the religion. And
With
the religion, you're struggling with who you are as an individual.
Okay. Right? Yeah. So my main big message that I just wish everyone could hear is that you can't hate yourself into change. You cannot hate yourself into change. And for those of you who, you know, there's a difference between weakness and sin. Weakness is lack of willpower, is lack of strength. It's human limitation. Sin is open rebellion against God. That's very different. And most people who come to me who want to quit viewing porn, they're struggling with the lack of strength and lack of willpower and the lack of knowledge to do it. They're not struggling with just like, you know, this is so sacrilegious, but I'm going to say it, like, screw you, God, like, take this. You know, it's very, very different. you know what? Our weaknesses, they don't keep us from God. God, and if you read scripture and study this, weaknesses bring us closer to him. And God gives us grace because of weakness. And so studying grace, studying Brad Wilcox had a good talk in conference. Don't look at his other talk. That was really crappy. But look at his conference talk about.
You're talking crap on my homie? We talked the other day. So.
I mean, just that one that blew up, right? The fireside, the racist one. Don't look at that one. But look at the really beautiful, like his talk, My Grace is Sufficient, changed my life. And his talk, It Isn't a Sin to Be Weak, I've heard is just incredible too, with the same ideas. So go and listen to those. Think of sin versus weakness and really decide to like, and understand you can't hate yourself into change. And there's nothing wrong with you. Shame is not from God. And in fact, you will feel closer to God. You'll have a deeper relationship with God when you're able to get rid of shame. And that's a daunting, hard task, depending on all the stuff you might have in your brain about that. But
yeah. And, you know, one day I want to bring you back on sometime in the future to talk about some spiritual stuff there. Cause I love it. I love how it's been able to help you. Even some of Brad Wilcox's non-racist talks.
Even his non-racist ones are really great.
I know. It's hard to believe that, though. But anyways. Yeah. Because now my mind just blew up with a ton of questions. But I know we don't really have time for that. So.
Write them down and I'll come on again if you want.
Okay. Awesome. Appreciate that. Yeah, tell us about your masterclass real quick. Like, I want people, I mean, this podcast, the other episodes are part gossip, but I like people to also, I want them to have resources for help and
other aspects of
your life, right? So, yeah, tell us about your masterclass. I see those ads everywhere. I shouldn't have never messaged you once because my Facebook feed never stops having
them. Yeah, the ads algorithm will do that. They'll start, really bombarding you. So you can sign up for that, sarahburr.com/masterclass. It's called How to Quit Viewing Pornography Without Willpower, or How to Overcome Pornography for Good Without Using Willpower. We dive into a lot of these concepts and other concepts that I've talked about. I also have a podcast called Overcome Pornography for Good, where we talk about a lot of these concepts. And then we dive into some more of the spiritual stuff in specific episodes, especially, you know, in the first 50 or so, there's a number of different episodes on spirituality or weakness versus sin, or anyways, there's some really good ones to hear if you want to hear me ramble a little bit more.
It's up to you. You're the one that's time restricted.
Well, I mean, if you want to hear me talk more, you can hear me on the podcast. Okay.
Wow. I feel like an idiot now.
No, don't. don't.
I'm not gonna edit it out though, so people can know. And with that, so I do want to bring this up too, because I know life coaching it can cost some money. Well, I guess what's the benefit of going with you versus just going on your podcast and your masterclass and.
Well, it just depends on what the person is looking for. The program is set up to be more application based and a lot of like help, a lot of one-on-one help. And so you can sign up for one-on-one sessions with me or another coach, or you can just come to, we have weekly like big group coaching sessions where I bring on about 5 or 6 people each call and we coach through stuff. And there's also access to the Ask a Coach board, and you get lifetime access to all of that stuff. And it's program based. So there's actual actions and action items to do within the teachings and worksheets and working like deep inner work. So I like to say, you know, the podcast is learning, and a lot of people listen and they have like their mind is blown and they're making these amazing transformations. And then to actually come in and apply it and get the result that you want, that's the container the coaching program is for. But, like also I charge money for my services, not just because it's my job, but also because when I do that, then I can put more time and energy into my free resources. So my free resources are really amazing. Please take advantage of those. And please know that as I'm sharing my free resources, it isn't the goal is so that you can just come and pay money to me, like do that and come join the program if you want to, if it's going to be helpful for you. It's there for you, but please use my free resources. They're amazing.
And I love that. I love that you're out trying to give more. And I appreciate that. And I want to end with this. Well, I want to say this as my last piece, but one thing that we talked about with Kip was that, you know, he had never really tried to quit. You know, I mean, he kind of did once in a while, but then there was a moment where he was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to try a little bit harder this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he screwed up. And when he screwed up, even though he had always like, and by screw up, you know, I mean, he looked at porn. It was finally that aha moment where he's like, holy crap, I got to change. I can't continue to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess anybody listening to this, if you've had that moment enough to listen to it, I mean, some of you might be listening just because, you know, either Sarah shared it or I shared it. But if you know that you should change it, but you don't really want to yet, you should probably try to change it, right? I mean, try to have that thought so that you can have that moment so that all of a sudden you can change it.
Yeah, well, so even just getting really honest with yourself, and we're going to be just honest without the shame, because sometimes people don't admit to themselves they don't want to quit because there's a lot of shame. And so it's going to be a lot more useful for you to like say, okay, no shame here. What am I really thinking and what do I really want? And then you can dive into it and say, I don't want to quit because of this, this, this. And I do want to quit because of this, this, this. Look at those reasons and then decide what you really want with your life. What a lot of people find is that the long-term effects are a lot better for them than the short-term pleasure of porn, but you can't go in and that doesn't have to be the outcome for you. It's going to be a lot more useful for you to go into that shame-free, maybe talk to someone about it, maybe, you know, we do this work with our clients or, you know, a therapist or someone you trust or whoever, and sit down and really like think about your values, think about what you want from your life, come in with a shame-free perspective and more of just like, let's just be curious and explore what I really want for my life. And even if the answer is that I do want porn use or occasional porn use, I'm going to go into this question honestly seeking what is best for me instead of just trying to avoid it because I'm afraid of what's going to come up.
I love that. Y'all heard it from the professional. So, yeah. I don't know if you have anything else to add. I think it's a good episode.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You can't hate yourself into change. You can't tell yourself that you suck enough so that you will change. It just isn't going to work like that. It's going to be short term.
Okay. I'm going to make sure I can spread this across as much as I can.
Okay. So, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate your time, Sarah. Thank you for getting on here today and for sharing with us your wisdom. For those of you that are still listening at this point, go check out her podcast. Follow her page. I mean, she's really cool. She posts some cool things on there. I respect the hell out of Sarah. She's like one of the few people I look at on Instagram, and I'm like, damn, that's Superwoman right there. So,
thank you.
So yeah, go follow her page. But yeah, thanks, Sarah. I'm gonna end this episode now.
Cool. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Bye. Bye.